Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. It's going to be a great show. For the last three, 4 weeks, we've been very specifically talking about smart building projects, large ones at scale, and all the exciting new opportunities they present. Today, we're going to, unfortunately or fortunately, going to be taking some time to talk about a little bit more of the defensive side of a smart building strategy, specifically what it has to do with cybersecurity. And as the buildings become more instrumented and networked and connected, for all those benefits that they bring to the owners, the occupiers, they're also increased the potential for trouble as it relates to cybersecurity. And we've got two great folks joining me today, Ryan Albaugh, the Real Estate Technology and Innovation Strategist for Wells Fargo, and Sean Nealon, VP of Cybersecurity and InfoSecurity for Brookfield Properties. Guys, really good to see you. How are you?
Good, Jim. Good to see you as well.
Good to see you. Feeling good, Jim. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, obviously Wells Fargo and Brookfield, two household names from the standpoint of real estate ownership and operations. Brookfield on the owner side, and Wells Fargo on the occupier side. Not too many people bigger than you folks. I mean, I think Brookfield, one of the largest asset managers in the world. And Ryan, how many employees do you have at Wells Fargo?
I think our recent forecast was somewhere around 250,000.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for lending your time as well as your brand to this conversation. And I think it's important to note that, you know, this is a very important topic, one that we all have been working on for at least 5 years. And, you know, I'll be the first to say that I still don't think that the industry has truly embraced the importance and the need to dedicate certain time, money, and energy to this issue. So what I wanted to do was to lay some groundwork as far as, all right, cybersecurity, we all know about the breaches, SolarWinds and the Microsoft breach in the last few months, the Office of Management and Budget 5, 7, 6 years ago, the Sony hack. I mean, there's big high profile attacks that were either stealing data or making life miserable, right? Through just attacking somebody's system and impeding performance. So let's talk about specifically cyber threats as it relates to building operation technology, okay? HVAC, lighting, access control. What are some of the things that building owners have to be concerned about when it comes to somebody attacking their building? Ryan, why don't we start with you?
I think some of the challenges with the building technology world is that there's ultimately two components to it, right? We have an IT component that would be the computer or server or network equipment that helps the components of that system communicate, which I think we know how to deal with pretty well, although there are some challenges in the building world. I think the bigger challenge, though, is the what we call the operational technology side, and these are the Internet of Things, the widgets that are now getting more and more connected to our IT backbones, and they just don't have the level of sophistication or the processing power to incorporate a lot of the cybersecurity protections that we see in the traditional IT. So I think I think gets us to the core of some of the challenges that we're up against from a hardware perspective.
But I mean, I'm talking about the literal application. So some of the stories that I've heard were the Israeli building that was completely taken over, sealed up, encrypted, if you will, and held ransomware, right? And held hostage, I should say. And I think that the entry point to that hack was through a parking system that eventually weaved its way through all of the different operating systems. We all heard of the attack on that ski resort where prior to ski season, all the electronic locks on the doors were locked and the building sealed, if you will. And in that case, they were also looking for ransomware. I know REC, Charles and myself and others are starting to outline, what are the potential attacks or breaches as it relates to HVAC, lighting, access control, elevator. So Sean, I mean, have you heard of either within your portfolio, and if you can't disclose, I fully understand, specific attacks on buildings that will give our audience an idea of what they need to be concerned about?
Yeah, so as you said, I can't discuss anything specifically internally, you know, based on our approvals. But what I can say is we do see attempted attacks. We also do a lot of penetration testing on our buildings. And I can say that, you know, the traditional mindset that used to be used in properties, and I'm not talking about in Brookfield, I'm talking in generalizations from speaking to my peers, is that people, you know, always said, oh, we keep OT and IT separate. You know, we're not worried about IT because IT is completely separate from OT, because the view was, let's keep IT safe. Now that's definitely transitioned to saying we need to make sure the building is safe also. So we still keep them separate, but we need to make sure that people understand the risks of what's in the building. And to give you the example, you know, we've had, we've seen issues in, you know, lighting systems not functioning correctly in case of an emergency. And that has nothing to do with, you know, necessarily a cyber attack. But if you have a lighting system knocked out in an emergency stairwell during an incident, you know, you're walking down 30 to 50 stories in an enclosed, dark, small space, that's a, you know, a very dangerous situation.
Right.
We also have, you know, the life and safety concerns are always one of the things that we focus on. But then also, you know, even thinking of any sort of a shopping mall or anything like that, if it's, again, any sort of enclosed space, if you can kill the lights, turn the air conditioning, you know, up too high, or turn the air conditioning off, turn the heat off in the winter. You know, these are all really large concerns for us, because they not only necessarily cause an issue with the property, but they can cause physical damage, because pipes freeze, pipes burst, and it can lead to further issues.
Right, and in that scenario, you know, somebody trying to create some chaos in your building, like you said, sets off the fire alarms, turns off the lights, turns off the heat, you know, all simultaneously, you know, in a given scenario, that's, like you said, physical harm to people, physical harm to the building, chaos, brand reputations at stake, right? If you see people flying out of a building in the middle of a snowstorm in New York City, right? And so I think it's important, and that's why REC is moving forward with trying to identify very specifically the threats to each of the different systems in the building, who might perpetrate that threat, you know, is it a nation state or a disgruntled employee? What's the probability of that threat? And then what's the risk exposure from a financial and a brand standpoint? And I think, you know, hopefully we're going to come up with a nice little chart that basically shows you in one snapshot what the risk profile for building owners are, so they can see it pretty clearly, you know.
And Jim, I would also add to that, you know, there are situations obviously where for physical security, where you know, we could have cards stolen, right? If those aren't secured, we could have situations, as we discussed before, when we were in the green room, audio being captured from perhaps like a microphone put into your thermostat or your lighting system to help, you know, control clap on, clap off type of situations. You know, Alexa type of where it's becomes a data privacy issue and not as much a physical infrastructure problem.
Right, and we painted the worst possible scenario probably about 5 years ago, and this we were talking about in the green. So you buy a new lighting system from a manufacturer that has a microphone embedded in it, so you can say lights on. It's configured by a consultant. It's installed by an engineer. The building is managed by a property manager who's contracted from a service provider. Let's say Wells is the tenant and Brookfield's the landlord. And let's say in this situation, the tenant's network rides on the landlord's network. And during an extremely confidential board meeting, a trade secret is stolen and billions of dollars are lost. Who's liable? One of the above, some of the above, all of the above, right? And we haven't seen too many of these incidents yet, but as buildings and places get more instrumented and these technologies, microphones and cameras get embedded deeper into these systems, I think we have to start thinking about this. And I think we're talking earlier too, embedding it in leasing, lease documents, right? To at least start raising the awareness that, hey, you know, these things are possible. We've tried to think them through, and how do we deal with this if they should occur? Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I think the other avenue right now we have to take is not using those types of systems, which you know is an unfortunate thing as well. So.
Yeah, and what I would say, you know, we obviously, my legal team could give a much better description of the things that we're doing in our contracts to, you know, deal with the liability from those issues. But we also generally, you know, make sure that we have that hard segmentation. So as I was saying, in Brookfield's case, we don't allow tenants to, you know, to generally run on our network because of that issue. We don't want to be a service provider to them in that instance, because we want them to be able to manage everything themselves and be in control. But the one thing I would call out too that we haven't mentioned yet is also the, you know, the supply chain risk management. It's,
exactly.
You know, yeah. We have a lot of vendors that are touching our properties all the time. And, you know, if you look at our properties, you know, each property is its own world, right? It's its own network. It's its own system. It's its own entity. But, you know, there might be a vendor, and I won't name any vendors because I don't think any of them are doing something wrong. But there might be one of the vendors who's a large vendor that most building providers use. And if they have a cybersecurity incident, now you have access to hundreds or thousands of buildings, because it's not just Brookfield or Wells Fargo that's affected. It's everyone that that company services that might.
Which is what SolarWinds did. SolarWinds didn't go after the individual target. They went after the service provider touching all those targets.
Exactly.
And that's number one, very smart, okay? And number two should give us some indication of what we're up against. And if somebody applied that to the built environment, to your point, you go to a strategic vendor, that actually happened 5 years ago. That's what, actually what started the cybersecurity conversation in the RealCom community was a breach and an article that made it apparent that these systems were easy to penetrate, right? And so I don't know what kind of heightened awareness, or what it's going to take to get to heightened awareness, number one, but then more action, especially now with the pandemic and pressure on financials and, you know, 75% empty buildings, who's got the budget to go and deal with this kind of stuff, right? I mean, that's the other thing we're dealing with, is that, yeah, the buildings have been not full for a year, and so in the normal times, maybe you could get some budget, but I'm hearing more and more that that's a nice to have, but right at this moment, it's not a need to have, you know, protecting these systems. Have you guys gotten any pullback from management as far as your budgets and your ability to be offensive in this situation?
I would say not really. Cybersecurity is a prioritized risk with our most senior leadership. So we do report on cybersecurity directly to the board, multiple boards in Brookfield's case, because of the way we're structured. So I don't think that there's been a severe pullback in cybersecurity in any of our areas, because they understand the importance of it and the emphasis on making sure that we are secure.
Okay, before we take a break, I wanted to just ask each of you guys kind of a high level question. Because what we're going to do when we come back from the break is we're going to talk about what people can do, right? Now that we've exposed the problem, and I think everybody's in agreement we have a problem. But before we go to break, Sean, what keeps you up at night? I mean, what is the single most high-level problem as it relates to cybersecurity that keeps a guy with your responsibility up?
Yeah, I would say it's really two things. I mentioned the third-party risk. That, to me, is still the biggest concern that we have, is that, you know, one of our it's a supply chain attack that will affect a large portion of our buildings, because we do use several providers widely. Another one is just that, you know, someone trying to do the right thing will make a mistake. And what I mean by that is someone who's trying to be innovative and install new technology and build a bit better experience for the tenants doesn't, you know, necessarily follow the process and ends up exposing us to unnecessary risk and causes some sort of an issue that impacts our tenants. Because our main goal is to make sure that we're keeping our buildings as safe as possible for the general public in the cases where they're public. And then our tenants are as safe as possible when they're non-public spaces. So it's always a delicate balance for us. And that's really my concern is, you know, what's going to go in that we're not aware of? And, you know, what is the supplier going to do that might cause a risk for our building?
Yep. Ryan?
I would say it is solving the problem at scale. You know, organization like Wells Fargo, we have, over 6,300, 6,400-ish, buildings. We've got, over 13,000 ATMs. You know, much or most of that come with some sort of this type of infrastructure, whether it be lighting or HVAC. So, you know, how do you solve for the challenges that we're up against at that scale as quickly as possible?
I think we lost Ryan, maybe a little broadband burp. What we're going to do is take a brief commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the remedies, some of the strategies for a good cybersecurity strategy. Be right back. All right. And I would like to do a special shout out to Link Springs for being an episode sponsor. And they've been a longtime supporter of RealCom, IBCon, and the entire community. And I just want to say thank you for financial support of RealCom Live and for your support overall over all these years. So thank you. With that, we're going to bring back our two guests and continue a very good conversation. Ryan, you back?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
We can. I don't know. Were you hacked? That's the question. Somebody didn't like what you were saying.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe the kids just got home from school and took up all my bandwidth, perhaps.
That's probably the more likely story. And that actually is a good point. You know, we're so hypersensitive to these cyber attacks, which we have to be, but sometimes it's just plain old, you know, normal things going on. And there's that delicate balance. You have to be from hyper paranoid to hyper vigilant to, you know, not looking at every incident as the end of the earth. All right. So we were talking a little bit about what keeps you up at night. And I just want to, before we go on to the solution side of it, I'd like to point out, you know, Sean, what you brought up, that supply chain. The issue now, too, is that supply chain is going inside the devices, onto the boards, onto the chips, right? And this stuff is getting so small and so powerful. And we've actually heard talk of people about some labs who will take a controller or a particular piece of equipment and literally rip it apart all the way down to the chip level to make sure that there's no embedded back doors, if you will, in that piece of equipment. Because, you know, you buy something out of the box, you install it, you expect it that the vendor has done their job. But I think it's incumbent upon the industry, the community, to continue putting pressure on those vendors to say, you got to be doing your work inside those labs and inside that manufacturing facility to make sure that you're sending us sound devices. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're dependent on the supplier wholly to, you know, deliver a secure device. You know, while we do our due diligence, we don't have the ability to do a device teardown of every device that comes in. I mean, you know, we, as Ryan said, you know, he's dealing with however many thousands of locations. We're not dealing with that many locations. We have, you know, 650-ish buildings under management, but we are dealing with 320 million square feet of property under management. So, you know, the vastness of the number of devices it takes to have all of that, the way that you're going to have to support all of those devices, the networking underlies all of it. There's so much that goes into, you know, lighting up an entire building to support these smart technologies that you can't look at the every single detail of every device. It's impossible.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you think about the numbers. I think something's going to have to be made a little bit more systematic. I think industry standards are going to have to come into play, and organizations like the Real Estate Cyber Consortium are going to, you know, continue to put pressure on the industry to say, you know, everybody's got to share some of this responsibility.
Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, in an average smart building, you know, you don't realize how many devices are in it. A smart building can have 3,000, 5,000 or more devices on that one building. So, I mean, it's just the sheer volume of devices in those is insane to try to wrap your head around.
Well, and then when you start seeing all of your occupants start coming in with 5 to 10 IoT devices on their person, their phone, their laptop, their iPad, their smart shoes, their smart shirt, their smart hat, their smart watch. I mean, they're literally going to be moving into your facilities with their own little networks. And the exposure that opens up is just another layer of complication. Yeah. Ryan, you had something?
Well, no, I was just going to mention that, you know, there has to be a better base level standard in place for some of these IoT devices that are coming out right now. It's all over the board. And, you know, we have pretty stringent rules. I'm sure Sean has pretty stringent rules. They may differ, but I think probably at their core, there's a set of, you know, things that need to be done on these that aren't getting done on many of the devices.
So, even at the basic level.
At the basic level, exactly right. And they're very different. So with that quantity, they also become very difficult to manage, especially if they don't have, you know, automated interfaces that you can communicate with these things on to do patch management, to do password management if necessary. So stuff like that, we've got to raise the bar on it.
Exactly. So we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to get right to the Real Estate Cyber Consortium, because you know everybody's sitting there, okay, you know, you got my attention. I'm paying attention to this issue. I'm a little, you know, a little frightened by the magnitude of this issue. What do I do, right? So the quick and easy ones are, you know, get educated, read up, hire consultants, you know, reach out to people who are experts in this area. But I want to focus for our last 2-3 minutes on the Real Estate Cyber Consortium, right? It's germinated about 5 years ago, actually, with your old boss, Ryan Charles Myers, who's now, you know, the executive running REC, and Sean Brookfield's been there from the beginning. Why don't you take a minute or so and just explain why the REC is a real viable option for folks to look to try to sell, you know, solve these problems.
Yeah, I mean, so we, as you mentioned, 5 years ago, we get together with a lot of very smart people. And I think we all had this sense that we need to raise the bar. We need to figure out some way to collectively help the industry move to the next step in this process. We recognize some of the challenges, Jim, that you'd highlighted at the beginning of the presentation, some of the risks that are inherent in this technology. And so, you know, with just the immense representation of square footage of the folks that we got together and discussed, you know, what does it take? We talk about third-party risk, third-party supply chain. We talk about contracts. We talk about detailed operational controls for some of these areas. We talk about policies, procedures that should occur, and you know, I think we've made some great progress, you know, trying to pull together the OT security world and partner them with some of our IT folks who know how to do IT security, but may not be fully aware of how the OT or the built environment needs to operate just from a properties perspective. So it's been wildly successful up to this point, and I think we've just hopefully about to hit that, you know, hockey stick curve to really start taking off on what we need to do.
Ryan, real quick, unfortunately we're out of time. What about REC from your perspective and why it's important to Brookfield?
Sure. So for me, the reason REC has been so valuable has been just being able to speak to our peers and also understand the problems that everyone else is facing. Also, it's the, you know, the standards that we've created. So the fact that we've gone through and actually created some documentation that's industry-wide to support others in, you know, building their cyber programs. You know, the documentation that was created, I helped participate in creating it, and I do use it. So it wasn't just created as a template to hand out. It was created as something that we could use ourselves, but that would help others to actually, you know, make their program stronger. So I think the documentation that we've created, the documentation we're going to continue to create, but also that the ability to reach out to the people that are in the exact same seat I am to understand what the problem is, what they did for the problem that I'm facing right now, and have that industry knowledge is so valuable for me and for Brookfield.
And as a guy who's been on the journey 5+ years since the beginning, my response would be this simple. It is a big problem. You cannot handle it on your own. If we don't leverage each other, we will lose this battle, right? And there's no reason for an organization to start figuring this out on their own. A lot of smart people, to your point, Ryan, have been working on this. And if anybody's got any questions or issues, just reach out to any one of us, and we'll get you information about it. And hopefully this community, like you said, Ryan, the hockey stick begins. So guys, thank you so much. Important topic. We're going to have you back over and over and over again as this conversation continues. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to share on this topic. So thank you and have a great weekend.
Pleasure. Thank you. You too. Yeah. Nice seeing you, Sean.
Be good.
Yeah, you too.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. So with that, let's bring on that ever so important part of the RealCom Live episode, Howard Berger, and this week's Real Estate Tech, Prop Tech News. Howard, how are you?
Hey, Jim. Can you hear me?
We can.
Ah, okay. So thank you, Jim. And thank you, Sean and Ryan. Great show today. Yep. So as we do every week, we highlight a few stories from our weekly news briefing that's released on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific. So today's feature is a recap of our March 26th show, where we had Dean Hopkins from Oxford and Matt Vogel from Microsoft on the topic of demystifying digital twins. Important topic. And there's a link in the article to the show itself where Matt and Dean, they very clearly articulate how digital twins are much, much more than data visualization platforms or BIM on steroids, and how a true digital twin really will become the primary operational platform for building. So I think it's one of our best and most insightful shows yet, very much worth a watch. Quick shout out to our tech partner this week, Digital Lendlease, for this week's article by their CEO, Bill Rue. And in this article, Bill outlines five stages to pave the way for truly autonomous smart buildings. I mean, really deliver outcomes that matter most to people. Now, Lendlease Digital created a strategy, process, and technology platform for their own Lendlease portfolio, which they productize as Lendlease Podium. And this technology is foundational to one of their newest projects, the Milan Innovation District, AKA MIND, that's being built on the site of the former Expo 2015 site. And MIND is going to become a major nexus for science, technology, and innovation in Europe. And it looks like it's going to set some new smart city standards for with their more human-oriented approach to building and design. By the way, we'll be actually interviewing two of their senior project execs on this show on May 7th. Next, big news this week that SmartRent's going public in a $2.2 billion merger with Fifth Wall Acquisition Corp, giving the smart home tech sector a shot in the arm. For Fifth Wall, it's a pretty easy decision, as SmartRent is the smart home tech category leader with 15 of the 20 largest residential owners in the US as its customer. And it has a larger install base than all its competitors combined. So founded in 2017, SmartRent anticipating EBITDA in the positive territory this coming year. And that's from a growing revenue base that's already committed units with their, they have a very brand agnostic smart home IoT integrated operating system. It kind of looks like I'm out of time. So that's it for me today, but there's much more in our weekly briefing. So I encourage you all to check it out, and I'll see you all next week.
Howard, thank you as always. Great job. Yeah, what you do to compile the top news for the week is absolutely incredible. All right, so with that, let's hear from our final sponsor, and then I'm going to come back, wrap the show, and tell you a little bit about next week. All right. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to everybody for this week's show, Sean and Ryan, for their great insight on the topic of cybersecurity and OT, all of our sponsors, and a special shout out to Linkspring for being the episode sponsor. Without you guys, we can't do this kind of stuff. So next week, again, we're scanning the globe for the practical use and implication or implementation of technology, the projects. We're going to talk to you about Fifth and Dinwiddie project, a new benchmark for next generation mixed use development at the intersection of building science and data science. We've got three great guests. We've got Derek Tillman, Bridging the Gap Development, Craig Stevenson, the Oros Group, and finally, Donnie Walker from Newcomb Boyd. So don't miss it. Another bleeding, leading edge project, kind of resetting the bounds for what a smart building is. And we're looking forward to seeing them and you next week. So with that, have a great day, and we'll see you in a week. Be well.